Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen St. John and Nate Bucchetti with Jake Gutierrez on this Thursday, April 4th, 2024. Let's talk baseball with our baseball insider from ESPN, Buster Olney. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I know that the end of the game didn't turn out well for the Royals, but that was a fun series. And it really, to me, really showed how far the Royals have come in being able to go toe-to-toe with that really talented team in Baltimore. That was a step forward for the organization. There's no question about it.
All right, well, let's dig in a little deeper to this. Fabulous start by Cole Reagans.
Oh.
Mikel Garcia is having a breakout year this year. I've said that, you know, for the last couple months. He's an emerging star on this team. A very nice compliment to Bobby Witt Jr. But this rotation has been terrific so far. And the bullpen has not. And so that's the worst way to lose. You got a 3-0 lead. You had a great start from Reagans. You go into the eighth and ninth innings, and you give up two runs in the eighth, two runs in the ninth, and lose in walk-off fashion. And Will Smith, they brought him in. He wanted to be the closer. Told me to be the closer. I know that they had conversations with other teams about other closers. They couldn't get something done. And so Will Smith is the guy. And, I mean, he had a 4.40 ERA last year, a 4 ERA the year before. Doesn't scream closer. I know he's got experience, but Buster, as good as the rotation's been, that's how bad the bullpen's been. I'm with you. There's so many positives, but boy, that bullpen is that's ugly.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. The bullpen was the difference between this feeling like a genuine victory and a moral victory. You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to. I don't know if you know which broadcast you're watching yesterday, but I was watching the Orioles broadcast. You've got Hall of Famer Jim Palmer talking about Cole Reagans and comparing him in some ways to Ron Guidry,
God.
The former Cy Young Award winner. I mean, he just loved Cole Reagans, and he just talked about, you know, how efficient he was. You've got this Orioles team, which probably on paper right now is the best team in the American League, and he completely dominated them with ease. And I get it that the weather wasn't great, but they weren't doing anything. They're not even putting the ball, you know, hard in play. And yeah, you do wonder as we go along here, I mean, they have to at some point get better results back in. And by the way, they're not the only team going through this. The Houston Astros in the wintertime spent $95 million on Josh Hader, who's an historically great reliever. And early on, I think the Houston bullpen has an ERA collectively over 7, and Hader's blown a couple of saves. So it's early and it's a small sample size, but I think you're right to, you know, cite how Will pitched last year. I got to believe that the Royals are going to be open to change if this doesn't start to get better in a hurry. And here's the good thing. You can make over a bullpen different. You know, it's different than other parts of a team. Rotation, you know, guys in the starting lineup. You can make over a bullpen significantly over the course of a season. You can find relievers. You can see performance turn around. And the best example, you know, my time covering baseball with that were the 2019 Nationals, who had the worst bullpen in baseball for the first 3 months of that season. And at the end, with a couple of key moves and some turnaround performances by guys in the bullpen, they were doing a dog pile after winning the World Series. Daniel Hudson came in. He had been basically dumped by the Toronto Blue Jays. He goes over to the Washington Nationals, and he throws the last pitch of a World Series. So I do think that, especially with so much else going great, I really doubt that the Royals are going to be beholden to, well, we locked into this this pitcher as our closer and we're going to stick with that forever. I got to believe, unless you get a performance turnaround, that they're going to be open to a lot of possibilities.
And look, they have not been shy. It's not a secret that they were looking for a closer. There were reports
right out
there in January that they were interested in trading for a closer. I was told that they were interested in at least had discussions about Class A, had discussions about Kenley Jansen, and I was told to keep an eye on, and this is before the issues with his broken back, but before Devin Williams got hurt, I was told keep an eye on him because the Royals are going to monitor that situation, and that's a guy they can pursue. Now that's off the table, but is there anyone else that we should keep our eyes on? I know that it's funny. We say it's early, but the Marlins are already being called possible sellers now, considering they've off to a horrible start, and no one knows what the hell's going on down there. But and anyone else maybe that we could keep an eye on that might end up being available because the Royals had not been shy about their desire to acquire a closer?
Yeah, I think it's early for that. And, you know, what you get, the feedback that I constantly get from general managers when I ask questions about, you know, plugging holes in early April or, you know, early May is the prices are way too high. And you also, I think there's a general feeling that you need to live with the team that you put together for 40 days. And that doesn't mean that Will Smith is locked into the closer role, you know, for, you know, if the Royals were to take a similar approach. It doesn't mean he's locked into the closer role into the first week of May. They can change within the pitching staff. They can give somebody else the chance. You know, last week we were, you know, we did the Rangers and Cubs game in our first broadcast, and you know, we were asking Bruce Bochy, the manager of the Rangers, you know, what really turned around in the postseason for them, because they crawled into the playoffs and then they won an 11-0 in road games and won the World Series. And he goes, no doubt. You know, Josh Spores was a guy who was, you know, middle of to back end of the bullpen, and then he got hot and he turned it around, and he was, you know, he winds up throwing the last pitch of that World Series. And Boch talked about that. I mean, that's the nature of bullpens. They can be really volatile. But I do think that if it's not going well, especially with so many other parts of the team that are going great right now, I think there's an obligation to keep an open mind. You just can't be doing the same thing day after day after day. And I'd be really shocked if the Royals did, given all the other positives that are happening.
Well, and now they go from playing a Baltimore team that's, like you said, really good, to a White Sox team that scored all of 11 runs so far, which is worst in the American League. This should be a good opportunity for the Royals to get on track. Like, what do you expect in a series between the Royals and White Sox?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I mean, you don't, you know, they, of course, are an organization that's going through massive change. Chris Getz took over as the general manager. He did not hire Pedro Grifol, their manager. And, you know, this feels like a year of evaluation. You know, I was talking with Eduardo Perez, my colleague, and I said, boy, the hottest seat in baseball right now might be with Pedro. And the other day, I don't know if you saw this, it was one of those really unfortunate moments because it feeds into a narrative. But their game against the Braves was delayed because they didn't have a first base coach. And apparently he was looking for a helmet, but the game was stopped because the White Sox didn't have first base coach. And the field mic picks up the umpire saying, anybody can stand there. Like, get a player out there.
Wow.
You know, with a helmet. Get somebody out there. So it does feel like the White Sox right now are, you know, this is a transition year for them. And 100% it's a great opportunity. And here's the good thing is that they're going to miss Crochet, who has pitched so great left-hander in his first two starts. The way the White Sox rotation falls, the Royals will miss him, and that'll be a plus for sure.
We have Buster Olney on the line. Buster, I asked you, I mentioned the Marlins, who are still searching for their first win, and so, like, one of the I don't know, I thought more surprising or bizarre stories in the offseason is when they parted ways with their GM, Kim Ng, who I thought had done a great job and turned a team, helped turn the team into a playoff team. And I didn't understand what had happened there. And now it looks like they're just falling apart. And they could be the first team to wave the white flag and signal that they're open for business. And I do know that the Royals had multiple discussions about some of their arms, including bullpen arms, down in and you know, with the Marlins, and so that is something to monitor. But what the hell happened there? Because it looks like they had things in the right direction. Now it's the opposite.
Well, the numbers suggest that they probably outperformed their talent last year in making the playoffs. It was the first time that over a full season that they had made the playoffs since 2003. But Kim won out, and I started to hear last May and June that the Marlins owner was looking to make a change at general manager. Well, Kim, you know, had authority through the trade deadline. She went out and made a bunch of deals and worked to get better. And they pick up guys like Jake Berger from the White Sox. And lo and behold, they go on this bit of a rush at the end of the year. The Cubs fade, and they made the playoffs for the first time in a full season in 20 years. And then apparently the plans that were put in place by Bruce Sherman, the owner, to make over his front office, those remained in place. And so Kim, they make the playoffs, and everybody is talking in the first round how they got into this series against the Phillies, and it was a big moment for the team. And then right after that's over, then the owner says, yeah, we're going to bring somebody in, and you're going to be demoted to the number two. And Kim was like, no, that's not good for me. And so she leaves the organization. And look, were they steeped with talent? Were they poised for a big breakout year this year? No. But some of the players that she had acquired, including Luis Arraez, had done well. And it felt like, how can you possibly justify, essentially firing this person after you make the playoffs for the first time in 20 years? And they bring in Peter Bendix, another Tampa Bay Ray front office person. And they're off to this horrific start, 0-7, and already. And your question was totally appropriate about, you're the vulture who's looking over the Marlins roster, because that's what other teams are starting to do. Like, is Luis Arraez going to be available? Is Jesus Luzardo going to be available? Are some of these other players going to be available? Because they do look like they're headed down that path, which is kind of nutty. I don't know how. Even if you are the owner and you're thinking, I want to make a change, I don't know how you stay on that course after you have this mad finish and you make the playoffs. And it, apparently Kim did a really good job in making the right fixes to get the team into the postseason. I don't get it.
Nate Buchady.
Well, Buster, we can't go a week without asking about Shohei Ohtani.
By the way, Buster called me a vulture, and I liked
it. Well, hey.
That's what I like.
You know what? It's a vital part of the ecosystem.
How good is it to be on the other end of that, though?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Looking through and going, hey, we could use that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
A year ago, guys, we were talking about, okay, Royal sell-off, who's that going to be involved? We were talking about that before the end of April. We're talking about Aroldis Chapman and capitalizing on his value. And the flip side is now the Royals are good enough where you can legitimately have those conversations because, man, they look like they've taken a big step forward. And I'm feeling really good about my projection for a lot more wins after watching that series against the Orioles.
Hey, and little did we know when we were having those conversations about Aroldis Chapman that he was going to bring the Royals An ace.
If they wouldn't have had to lose a great closer in the process, they could use
both.
But
I'll do that every day of the week.
100%. And Buster, you know what? This year, it feels good to actually be upset by losing a game. Because last year was like, they're not really... It wasn't worth getting upset last year. Yeah. So it actually is good to be mad. All right, I'm going to move on to Ohtani here. He hits his first home run, ends his longest homerless drought to start a season. Is all fixed with Ohtani? What's the latest with him?
Yeah, and before I mention Ohtani, one more thought I was going to pass on. I don't know if you guys saw the quotes from Brandon Hyde, the Orioles manager, after the game last night. He raved about Cole Reagans, and he talked about, like, that guy is a number one type starter.
Go on.
So this is not just, this is not just all of us looking at Reagans and saying, he looks good so far. These are, as they say, Hall of Famer Jim Palmer, opposing manager of the Orioles yesterday, just heaping praise on him and how good he was. And so really exciting to see his progress. Now, about Ohtani, we had the
By the way, Buster, real quick, you're supposed to keep me in check.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're supposed to keep me grounded. Now I've got Mike Boddicker telling me that Reagans has the best stuff he's seen from a Royals starting pitcher since Brett Saberhagen. And then now you're throwing in there, oh, yeah, well, Jim Palmer, comparing him to Ron Guidry. What are you doing to me?
By the way, we don't need to talk about Shohei Ohtani. Right. Let's keep talking about this, Buster. I'm fine with it.
Cole Reagan's Ohtani. I'm sorry. You're adding to this, Buster.
If you start comping Mikel Garcia to like Hall of Fame third baseman, he might pass out on the air. I don't know.
Well, and Bobby Witt, right?
Yeah.
The other day I had Paul Imbecchietti, a great researcher for us, who's a great sense of baseball history, and he talked about how, and he said, early reactions to the season, and he said that in his eyes, there's no question, Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be an MVP finalist this year. Jesus. He didn't think he'll win it. You know, you got Aaron Judge, you've got Juan Soto. You know, there are other players in the American League, but he feels like that Bobby Witt Jr. has ascended now. So you start out with that is where the Royals are today. You assess what they look like at the end of the series against this incredibly talented Baltimore team. They've got potentially a top three position player leading, and they have potentially the best, one of the two or three best starters in the American League. Especially now that Gerrit Cole is hurt and he gets knocked off his perch. That's a great place to start, to have those two guys as anchors.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing. All right, Buster, Ohtani. I keep interrupting you about Ohtani. Go ahead with what you're going to tell us about Ohtani.
You know, Shohei Ohtani's favorite player is Cole Reagan.
No, that's right. Totally. That's exactly right.
No.
Buster. So, Bobby Witt Jr.
Buster.
Yes.
The one player that Ohtani fears, Cole Reagan.
Yeah, exactly. So we were around the, Dodgers last weekend. You know, we had him on Sunday night. And I would say this. You know, I asked Dave Roberts about the question of whether or not Ohtani's been affected by this ongoing situation with his interpreter, the investigation Major League Baseball's done. And Dave Roberts said, for him, the standard of an unflappable player is Corey Seager. And it feels like, in his eyes, Corey Seager blocks a lot of stuff out. And Dave looked at us without blinking and said, and I think Ohtani's the same way. Now, I would say, I think Ohtani's been pressing, but not necessarily because of the investigation. I can't get inside the man's head. But I do think he was pressing, and maybe it's just the good old-fashioned star player going from one team to another and trying to impress, a new set of fans and a new group of teammates, because there's no doubt his swing early this year has been off, and you can see him spinning off the ball. You know, he's just left-handed hitter with an open stance, and opposing teams are just attacking the outside corner because they feel like he's going to spin off the ball. When you start to see Ohtani driving those outside, pitches on the outside to left center field, that's when you'll know for sure that he's locked in. I'm sure that hitting that home run last night was something that'll help him. Now, Ohtani doesn't reveal that much, because he doesn't do a lot of media and it's not really insightful when you do talk to him. But he acknowledged after that home run last night that he was relieved. And it doesn't surprise me. And, boy, when you're around the Dodgers, a couple things jump out. Their offense is so deep and so ridiculous. They are going to hit through so many games where they just beat the opposing pitchers into submission and, put up 7, 8, 10 runs. And you also feel like they've got some flaws. Like, there's some things, especially with the infield defense, where you wonder how it's going to translate when we get to the postseason. And here's the weird thing is that what they do in the regular season, because they're so good offensively, that it feels like it's irrelevant. Like, they're playing 162 games that don't really matter because they're going to get into the playoffs. They're that good. The big question is what happens once October starts.
You also wanted to talk about Juan Soto with the New York Yankees.
Boy, is he going to make some money. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, that Ohtani's, you know, the $700 million contract, that's a mirage. It's not worth $700 million. It's all, so much is deferred without interest. The actual value of the contract is about $461 million. Soto has a chance to surpass that this winter. You know, he is off to this unbelievable start. He's getting on base more than half the plate appearances. He looks totally comfortable. He's a free agent in the fall. The Yankees are going to want to re-sign him. And the Mets are going to make a hard run at Soto, too. And it'll be absolutely fascinating to see how this bidding plays out because, of course, the Mets are owned by the richest owner in baseball in Steve Cohen. So as you watch Soto put together these numbers, just keep in mind that it's all building up to this incredible bidding war that we're going to see in the fall.
What's that price tag going to be?
I think it's north of 461, which is Ohtani's contract value. I think he's going to break the record because I just think it's one of those circumstances, a little bit like Yoshi Yamamoto, the Dodgers, you know, to have the Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies involved in the bidding for Yamamoto meant that it was going to drive the numbers to where beyond where anybody expected. And we know Soto turned down a $400 million plus offer earlier in his career from the Washington Nationals. And so I do think he's going to wind up breaking, breaking the record that Ohtani set last winter of $461 million.
How many teams, though, could actually be in the conversation with the price tag?
Not many. And you know, it's interesting. You would think with a player as great as Soto is that a lot of teams would check in, but I just don't think it's realistic. And he doesn't really need other teams. When you get the Yankees and Mets, I mean, that's really, from his perspective, if you're looking to cash in and get a record-setting deal, he's represented by Scott Boras. I'm sure Scott, you know, after what has been a tough winter this winter, will be back in action next winter. And he's going to get a huge number because he's got these two teams in New York that desperately want the guy.
Mets are looking good so far.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you talk about, you know, the Marlins are obviously, you know, giving cover to other teams with their bad start. But the Mets, there's a stench going off this team early on. You know, they made those deals at the trade deadline last year, Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, and they really haven't replaced those guys in the rotation. And so early on, you know, they're not playing well, and they had that really ugly situation with the Brewers last week where Rhys Hoskins has a perfectly legal slide and Jeff McNeil is complaining about it. And he's screaming at Hoskins, and the bench is empty, and they kind of look like wimps. You know, the next day, Hoskins, you know, what people are wondering, are the Mets going to throw at him? In his first plate appearance, he has a two-run single. In his second plate appearance, he launches a home run. And then, like in the seventh inning, a Mets reliever comes in and appears to throw at him, throws a fastball behind him, and didn't hit him. I mean, they couldn't do anything right. You know, the timing of when to retaliate, how they executed that, and they just looked terrible. And you do get the feeling that David Stearns, the first-year general manager, he's going to be quick to pull the trigger. We talked about the Marlins in terms of making trades. The big question around the Mets is, will they trade Pete Alonso before the deadline? I don't think there's any question about it, unless they play better, that's something that they will – very much entertain the middle of the year.
Wow, that'll be a blockbuster. A blockbuster from Buster Olney. Hey, Buster, thank you so much for the time. Thank you for just talking about Cole Reagans for a while. We appreciate it. And find another great pitcher to compare him to for next week to get me all crazy, all right?
Yeah, as soon as I hang up with you guys, I'm calling Sandy Koufax to ask him about Cole Reagans.
Do you see yourself in Cole Reagans, Sandy? Thank you, Buster. We appreciate it.
See ya.
I'm not doing this. I'm just hearing things. He's the one that brought up Jim Palmer comparing Cole Reagans to Ron Guidry. Boddicker's the one that said Sabre Higgins. I'm just...
But when the thing is, when they say these things, it gets etched into your brain right. In a way that you can't let go of either.
But it's a great reminder. This time last year, we're talking about, oh, man, I hope they can get something for Aldis Chapman. Hope they don't screw this one up. Get something of value. At least get a high end A or double A guy that you could dream on, you know, maybe it could turn into something in a year or two. you think about, you know, here we go again. It's early. But you think about what that trade is right now and what that trade could become. That could go down as one of the greatest trades in Royals history. If he ends up being the number one or the ace of the staff for the next several years, and they traded a rental reliever for him, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to continue to pitch very well. But it has the early returns. It has the opportunity to become one of the greatest trades in Royals history.
Even better than the Jerome Dye for Nathan Perez trade?
What about Jermaine Dye?
What did I say?
Jerome. You know, whatever.
Yeah,
the Jerome Dye trade.
That
would have
been a good trade.
Me.
That would have been a good trade.
But I mean,
Jermaine Dye.
Yeah,
for nothing.
You know, but hey, there's been some great trades. But this has a shot with his trajectory, and you watch him. He's not doing this with smoke and mirrors.
You got better guys than the Ed Hearn for David Cohn trade.
You guys got like Mike Boniker and Jim Palmer that watch him and are overwhelmed. Like, yeah, other GMs say, "Well, yeah, he's their Jacob DeGrom." Like,
I'm trying to think of what the best trades because I'm rattling off all the bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
To be a smartass, but I'm trying to think of the best trades in Royals history.
Grinky.
Greinke,
yeah, the trade to acquire Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar. When you get two ALCS MVPs in a trade, that's a good one.
Yeah, now they traded away a really good player,
right,
obviously, in Greinke. Where this one you're talking about, they traded a rental player away, so that makes it better. That was a good trade. I mean,
when a trade and you get James Shields and Wade Davis back.
The one that was the most criticized trade maybe they ever had was one of the best trades.
But what
they ever
makes
had.
This even better is they just traded a guy they just signed that was just a rental player. And Chapman's fine, but what was Chapman when they signed him? Guy couldn't throw strikes.
They signed him off the street.
He was walking down the street. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB. Nate, don't write a check with your mouth that your ass can't cash.
Okay. Done that a few times in my life.
I was a... I was a big talker at the beginning of the semester because, you know, it was the girls' first semester at St. Pius.
Yeah.
And I made, you know, I try to, it's probably wrong, but, you know, I make mistakes daily as a parent. And I try to incentivize appearing on the honor roll.
Yeah.
And I was shot a look from Susan St. John even when I proclaimed this at the start of the school year. Like, hey, you get on the honor roll, this is what you get. Number one, I thought they'd forget about it. And I'm happy, don't get me wrong, but we just got word that yesterday they both made the honor roll. And then I was immediately reminded about what I had promised, what amount. So they got me.
Straight cash?
There's some online shopping that's going to be done. You know? There's filled shopping carts that are awaiting my checkout.
Checkout needs to happen. Oh, yes. Boy.
Well, but hey. I mean, what can I? I did it. My fault. Not my fault. So it worked. I can't be expecting this every semester, but, you know, first one, let's go. Get off on the right foot. So that's.
I know that when my dad and my Uncle Andy were little kids. Well, they both can play the accordion incredibly well. because they, you know, were raised by a Polish immigrant. And my grandpa, who had a manual labor job, told them that if they got first place in the Tamboritzen contest, the accordion playing, they would each get Schwinn bikes.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Never thinking they would get first place, and oh boy, he had to pay up. And to this day, my dad and my uncle are good accordion players because of it. You know, so this could pay off for you in ways you never imagined down the road.
It's already. I never sniffed the honor roll, so
right.
It's exciting to see that last name up there.
You could have though.
Phil paved the way. I could have done a lot of
stuff,
but
upstairs.
I didn't do.
Well,
did I? Do I?
Yes.
That's debatable.
I often say Stephen St. John's one of the smartest people I know.
Yeah. Who do you say? Who the hell do you say
that to? A lot of
people. You stand in the mirror and say that?
I do. Well, you know me. I just walk up to random people on the street that don't even know who you are.
I appreciate that.
Stephen St. John's one of the smartest people I know. And they go, okay, well, thanks for telling me that.
To my wife.
She doesn't need me to tell.
Right now she's laughing out loud. Coming up on the show, we'll talk to Sherm. We'll talk to Dieter. We'll talk to Jesse Newell.
Shut up, dummy.
Right. That's right. The Royals lose a disappointing game because of the bullpen last night, but I'm going to choose now, after our discussion with Buster Olney, to focus on the terrific start from Cole Reagans, another excellent performance from Michael Garcia. I'm not going to let Will Smith and the bullpen bring me down. I'm going to focus on the building blocks that I see, the positive aspects of this baseball team. Because I did not, I was very, very pissy in the 6 o'clock hour about the bullpen. But now I take a step back and I feel better now. Put things in perspective. Jake, have you been toying at all with the Royals or Cole Reagans or any props or anything like that?
I mean, I had the beginning of the year bets. I put money on Reagans to win the Cy Young. But I'm
talking about game by game, like strikeouts or like that.
I'm not good at gambling on baseball.
There's only one way to get good.
Well, I'm kind of
get after it.
I'm kind of trying to keep my eye on things and try to watch how things trend. But I've never really been successful at gambling in baseball.
Selena knows about your gambling abilities. She wants to know what you're looking at for the UConn Iowa game this Friday night.
I mean, it's hard not to go with the GOAT.
Right.
I mean,
which GOAT?
Hmm?
The GOAT coach or the GOAT player?
Oh. Well, the one on the court. I mean, right now Iowa is a 2.5 point favorite. I think I'd lay those 2 points.
That's going to be a good game.
I don't know.
You jacking around with the men's Final Four, though?
I mean,
you haven't shown much excitement about that.
I've kind of stepped back after the first weekend. I was good. I was up, and I kind of just kind of stepped back. I didn't put any wagers down in the Sweet 16. Really,
I feel stupid for not just betting UConn every game to cover.
I mean, it's
and now I feel like when I do it, they won't.
I kind of tonight. There's the NIT championship.
Oh, yeah? What's the line there?
Indiana State, our guy.
What's the line?
Indiana State's favored by 3.5.
You know what? And it gets Seton Hall, right?
Yeah.
Probably the two teams that were the biggest misses by the NCAA Tournament Committee.
Absolutely.
And I watched that Seton Hall team up close, and not that beating Mizzou was some gigantic accomplishment. That's a good basketball team. And based on what they did in the Big East, they should have been in. And we know Indiana State should have been in. What's the line?
Indiana State minus 3.5. I might tiptoe around that. Right.
Well. Thank you.
So there's the top story on ESPN about the women's game is breaking down whether or not Caitlin Clark or Paige Beckers is the nation's best player. And I find that, like, is that really even an argument? But they state it. That overall,
dude, Paige Beckers is incredible. She was a national player of the year as a freshman.
Yeah. That just seems wild, though. We were talking about, we just saw Caitlin Clark go for 40 right. and, what, 12 assists?
She's the best scorer, but watch yeah. Paige Bueckers in her all-around
she's
game.
She's the best offensive player.
Right.
Because she's not just a scorer, she's the best passer in college basketball, too. But
and Bueckers is also coming off an injury.
And Bueckers does a lot of other things.
Right.
You know, so that's what they're that's the argument
she's
there.
She's great, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, but my point is a serious publication is weighing whether or not there's somebody as good as Caitlin Clark right now. That shows you how big time this matchup is.
I'm not going to disrespect Paige Bueckers like you are. She's, you know.
Well, I'm not going to disrespect Caitlin Clark. People are saying she's
not.
The greatest of all time, but
right.
she might not even be the best this year.
Well, we'll find out Friday night, won't we?
Maybe.
We will take a break back after this on WHP. Quick segment here, but enough time for me to tell you that I'll be at my Hy-Vee in the Northland off I-29 and 64th Street on Saturday. Stop by and see me. It should be a lot of fun. I'll be there from 10 until noon. You want to know why I'm going to be at Hy-Vee on Saturday, Nate?
What are you going to be there for?
Why?
For a good old-fashioned meat sale.
Yeah.
And when you got a good old-fashioned meat sale, I'm the guy you bring in.
That's right.
I can promise you that. You stop in, get incredible deals from the butcher block. Also, Hy-Vee's having a graduation open house from 11 until 2, a perfect time for parents and graduates to see and taste options for the graduation. I have no one graduating this year, but I'll be sure to go and taste different options for
I like meat.
possible yeah. party. So stop by and see me at Hy-Vee in the Northland, 29 and 64th Street.
I like meat.
this Saturday from 10 until noon for a good old-fashioned meat sale. That's right. Stephen St. John and meat in the Northland.
I want my hamburger juicy.
Go hand in hand.
That's been the story for decades. I'll see you at Hy-Vee this Saturday, I-29 and 64th Street from 10 until noon, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.